Hey, fellow Tallery, welcome to another episode of Open the Iris on the Infinite Potato Alliance Network. I'm Ro, and with me is Rick. What's going on, Rick?
Let me just take look at this ring for a second, and that didn't hurt too much, did it? Now I'm your trusted servant. Remember? Yes.
Absolutely. But so we're doing a double, and I actually forgot to even talk to you about this, right? Like, how do you want to do that? Okay, so this is how I figure we're gonna talk about the first one, then we're talking about the next one, but we're gonna give some commentary on the first one. Yeah. It probably won't be as long as the next one, but yeah, we'll get into that. So we're talking about double feature. It's season 5, episode 15, Summit, and after we'll be following up with season 5, episode 16, Last Stand. But let's talk about Summit. Air date March 22nd, 2002, written by Joseph Malozzi and Paul Mully, directed by Martin Wood, with an IMDb score of 8.1. And when I copied and pasted this on my Word doc, I was like, wow, that's a lot longer than I thought it would be. So let's get into this character. Let's get into this. So yeah. So we start off with scenes from previous episodes to remind us of key elements / figures in the main storyline of various Tok'ra and Goa'uld. We're reminded of the characters Martouf, who hosted Lantash, part of the Tok'ra, and he was actually killed by Carter in season 4, episode 5, Divide and Conquer. But, you know, Lantash still survives, along with then season 4, episode 13, The Curse, when we see Dr. Jackson's ex, Dr. Sarah Gardner, gets taken over by Osiris. And we're also reminded that there's some super secret unnamed baddie from previous episodes. Okay, so we start off in space, where several Goa'uld motherships are gathering together, and you see a teleport to the larger ship. We're now reintroduced to Zapakna, season 3, episode 15, Pretense. And I thought, like, oh, this is the first time we see him. I'm like, wait a minute, let me go ahead and click here on the wiki. I'm like, oh no, he was in that episode, let me... I had to rewatch a lot of fucking episodes for this. Like, I was like, God damn it. That was fine. The episodes I actually rewatched were totally okay, so it was okay. Anyways, if you remember that episode, it's where the Tolans hold a trial for Skara versus his Goa'uld Chlorel for freedom. Mm-hmm. And Zapakna is played by Kevin Durant, who I mainly remember as the big mutant guy from X-Men Origins Wolverine. He's apparently also in Lock and Key on Netflix, and my husband and I, we never got back into it, even though we read the graphic novel and love the graphic novel, but I'm just going ahead and skipping on to whatever things. Don't mind me, guys. It's it's Wednesday. It's a special day today, and I'm feeling great. So, okay.
You also may be, like, one of the only people on Earth who not only admits to, but can remember details from Wolverine Origins.
The thing is, the movies I watch and enjoy, I enjoy for my own personal fulfillment. I know that things can be bad. Some people consider them bad. And then they have valid criticisms. And if I like it, I like it, and I don't care. And I'll always remember that shit because it's lovely. And you just got to have those memories. But I also mainly also remember Kevin Durant, because I recently rewatched Smoking Aces. And he is one of the crazy redneck white supremacist brothers with Chris Pine and... I think it was Flea. I don't know. I'm pretty sure it was Flea. Like, I just totally forgot about Chris Pine, because Chris Pine is a guy. He has, like, this funky tattoo of a girl, and her crotch is in his armpit. So that's...
Oh, nice.
Very memorable. Highly recommend Smoking Aces. It's not, like, high tier, but it's just fun and entertaining. So highly recommend. But sorry for all the tangents. But anyways, so yeah. So Zapakna is like, hi. And you see Osiris is in Sarah Gardner, and... And he's like, hey, what's going on? And so, hold on. But yeah, since Osiris is now in Sarah Gardner, you know, we discover that we've discovered that there's been a lot of infighting amongst the Goa'uld system lords, and Osiris is now considered a formidable opponent after all the years of hibernation, because they are essentially taking over all of the remnants of various system lords that have died, such as, like, you know, Kronos and Apophis. So then Zapakna offers Osiris a position of great power under his mysterious great system lord that has yet to be named. Osiris is like, why would I serve? Y'all need to serve me. Then Zapakna reveals his master to be Anubis.
Dun, dun, dun.
To where Osiris pees themselves in fear. Roll over credits. Okay, so now we're at SGC. We get an unplanned visit from the Tok'ra, and we see Raynal, which I don't really remember Raynal. And she basically brings grave and urgent news in regards to the system lords. They go to the situation room, and Raynal explains that the death of Apophis and Kronos, blah, 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 you know, from them, there's a lot of infighting and large losses amongst various lords, and along with the super secret system lore that they don't know about. But now all the system lords are meeting together for a truce, and the opportunity to take them out all at once is now in play. Rennell further explains the details of the summit and answers their questions. The only viable plan is to have Dr. Dallin Jackson go in as one of the slaves of the system lord, as he is well knowledge with all the system lords and can speak gold. Rennell tells them that they can go to their current base of operations on the planet Ravana, and they can meet up with Jacob Carter to go over all the full plans. So now it's up to Jackson to decide. Jackson decides to go after Till comes to press him of his decision. So we then see SG-1 and SG-17, and with SG-17, we see Lieutenant Leader Boy Elliot from Season 5, Episode 13, Proving Ground. And he's super stoked to see the Tok'ra, like little giddy schoolboy, like, and to go there to Ravana. And then when they go through the Stargate, they're then greeted by Jacob Carter and Aldwyn. And Aldwyn is like the Tok'ra knowledge guy there to teach SG-17 about Gold histories and tactics of the Second Dynasty. SG-1 then goes with Carter, and Jacob Carter, duh. Okay, I should put Jacob Selmack versus just Carter. That's horrible, Rochelle. Bad you. Okay, and then SG-17 goes with Aldwyn. In the Tok'ra underground briefing room, Jacob goes over more details of how Daniel will be the slave to the system lord Yu. And if you remember Yu, he's from Season 3, Episode 3, Fair Game, where they had that summit with the Asgards about the treaty as Earth as a protected planet. So, yeah, you had to remember that episode too, everyone. And then Daniel is like, you will remember me, but the Tok'ra said they created a chemical Daniel could use on you to convince him that Daniel is Jaren, and Jaren is like the prime slave called the Lotar, like the highest ranking slave. So, and essentially once all the system lords arrive, Daniel will release this newly created poison that creates a gas that will only kill the symbiotes and not the host. However, even if when the Ghoul dies, they release their own poison, and they're still going to kill the host. So essentially, it's going to kill everyone. All in all, they have the potential to kill seven system lords, and essentially Jacob's going to help Daniel into Yu's home, as Jacob was able to infiltrate himself as one of Yu's servants. The meeting adjourns. O'Neill goes to Jacob, feeling a bit apprehensive about the plan, and feels that Tok'ra is hiding something, or that the plan will only create room for someone far worse than the current system lords. Jacob adamantly tells O'Neill that this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and to deal a crushing blow to the goal world states that they're going to wipe them all out with the strongest of convictions, because, you know, hey, that doesn't sound like blindness or, like, no Russian, you know, whatever. Okay. It never bodes well. Like, that's such confidence. You know, you don't test karma like that, but we'll soon find out.
The Tok'ra have never been, short on arrogance. So.
Indeed. Good call. But yeah. Back on Zapakna's ship, Osiris questions the task given to them and why not Zapakna. Zapakna reveals that he is aware of the poison and is on a mission to actually obtain that weapon, and Osiris is sent to the summit as he's good at politics. The scene then gets really weird with like sexual innuendos and mannerisms that Kevin Durant gives. And it's like, you know, kinky weird sex vibes for all. Jacob and Daniel go on their spy ship, and they go over more details on the mission, making sure Daniel knows his shit. Daniel poses questions of what will happen to the Jaffa with the poison and other various invalid ethical moral dilemmas. Jacob was like, with O'Neill, adamantly presses this is the first time in a long time they can deal a striking blow to the goal, and they have to spread like a as they have been spreading like a plague for thousands of years, and this is the first time they saw no population growth with the goal. They have to take the advantage of this opportunity. Jacob then gives Daniel a ring with a needle on it to use on you to give mind-altering chemical trick him. Daniel and Jacob begin to use compound, take out the main slave, Jaren. Daniel eventually gets to Yu and puts the needle on him to convince System Lord Yu that he is in fact his Lotar Jaren. Back on Ravana, Aldwyn is teaching SG-17 about how the crystals make the hidden underground tunnels and how they work, because it will obviously be relevant down the road. In another area, Rennell shows Carter what happened to Martouf, and unfortunately they could not save Martouf, and we're just shown the symbiote Lantash and a stasis water chamber, like you remember seeing Luke Skywalker in The Empire Strikes Back. Lantash is still recuperating, but the search for the new host has been underway. Carter wants access to the research, but the Tok'ra have been basically stonewalling her. Carter then questions the method the method and choices the Tok'ra made, and where they chose to sacrifice Martouf just to study his brain in regards to the Zaytark technology. If you remember from the previous episodes, the Ghoul continuing to sleeper agents. Renown then poses that Martouf would have sacrificed himself for the Tok'ra, and he still lives on in Lantash. Alarms go off! Ravana is under attack from Zapakna and the fleet of ships. The Tok'ra Stargate can't be used, there's no way to get off the planet, making the situation pretty dire for the Tok'ra and the SG teams. Airstrikes continue to happen, causing cave-ins. While some Tok'ra can try to evacuate, others in the SG teams use the crystals to create more tunnels to help escape, as they cannot handle the firepower of the Ghoul. They don't have any more of the poison, and it's just overall appearing pretty dire for all of those in the underground tunnels of planet Ravana. And again, more cave-ins happen, resulting in injuries and deaths of several Tok'ra and SU-17. So Zapakna continues airstrikes, but also orders ground troops to start mobilizing. They get to the lab, this is SG-1, and with Raynal, where Lantash is, Raynal pulls all the information from the computers, including the super secret formula for the Ghoul killing poison, onto a disk, as they will never let their secrets be given to the enemy. O'Neill expresses his desire to not die and states that they need to go to the surface to assess the situation. Alwyn then takes O'Neill and takes him to the alternate ring room to go to the surface. They get to the surface, seeing all the ground troops of Zapakna mobilizing. O'Neill tries to radio Carter, but can't get through. As the three try to get back to the tunnels, they are bombarded with airstrikes, and we lose Alwyn. Tilk and O'Neill get back to the tunnels. More cave-ins happen, and we're in the computer lab room. The Jaffa have breached the tunnels. As we can see, there's no bodies. In the lab room, Carter wakes up to see that both the major of SG-17 and Raynal have died. Carter grabs the disc from Raynal, carrying all the secrets, and hides it in her many pockets. She then finds a chamber that contained Lantash to be empty, only to see that it went to Lieutenant Leaderboy Elliot, as he is also badly injured from the cave-ins. Lantash tells Carter he had no choice, but he will try to help Elliot, but it will take all his strength to keep him alive. Carter and Elliot meet up with Tilk and O'Neill to inform each other of the situations. They can hear the Jaffa coming closer and decide to go back up to the surface, seeing that no other Tok'ra is alive. As they get to the ring room, another cave-in blocks their way, and they are currently trapped. Daniel accompanies... Now, that's basically with what they're doing. So I kind of like went back and only stick like with certain things. Yeah, whatever. I stuck with like Daniel's journey and then SG's journey. So that's how I split it out, because it's just easier that way. Yeah. So back with Daniel. He accompanies Lord Yu to the summit. Yu tells Daniel to trust no one. They go to the main meeting area, to where the other system lords are chatting. Lord Yu is announced, and Yu and Daniel walk around the room, where Yu goes over each of the system lords we haven't been acquainted with, and he and Daniel speak about their future allies and their various exploits. So we're introduced to Bastet, Kali the Destroyer, Baal, Morrigan, and Olokun. We'll talk about them later. Each system lord, of course, represents a mythological god from various cultures. They're all concerned with this new threat, as they have suffered losses from the yet-to-be-revealed Anubis. Daniel sneaks off and radios Jacob, who's in the ship nearby. Jacob says it's poison time, but then Daniel tells Jacob that there's someone else arriving, a super secret person. Daniel will tell Jacob I'll talk to you later. So the system lords meet, and then they question who this new adversary is. A lot of accusations are made. There's no real evidence that any one of the system lords are the culprit. As the arguments happen, Daniel gets his poison ready, waiting for the final guest to arrive, and then enters Osiris, aka Sarah Gardner, where Daniel's like, oh shit, and turns around hoping Sarah doesn't see him and recognize him. But Lord Yu calls for Jiren for drinks. Daniel must comply and is seen by Sarah, but Osiris doesn't reveal anything and asks for the summit to proceed. Daniel then radios Jacob /Selmac and tells him that Osiris is here, and Daniel says that, hey, he recognized me, but they didn't tip their hand. And then enter Osiris, as she corners Daniel and reveals that they do remember who he is, and then the door closes. Roll credits.
Dun, dun, dun.
Okay, so as you know, listeners, I have not seen any of SG-1. We're watching it as we go along, and this is my turn to do the synopsis. And so then I was like, hey, Rick, we're supposed to actually do this last week, so my bad, but I was like, hey, I need to watch the next episode, and I'll go ahead and do the synopsis for that, so it's just easier on everyone. So you get a twofer, so enjoy that. And so I watched the next episode, and so I will get into the next episode in a second, but let's talk about this episode. So happy fun times. People are like, I don't like the Toker just being all about subterfuge and everything. It's just like, really, like, you guys need to do something better about that. And I don't want to like ask questions that pretty much lead into the next episode. So I don't know what else to say. That, like, you know, this is a good episode. It's fun to see how this happened. The best thing about this episode was seeing all the system lords. That's like the best thing about it. Like, everything else, I'm like, whatever. And I should have known better that Lieutenant Leaderboy Elliot was basically, oh, we know your name. Pew, pew, pew. You're going to probably die later on. That's all we know.
Here's a red shirt for you. Put this on. Don't ask questions.
Yeah, red shirt guy. Yeah, but definitely this is the Tok'ra showing their asses and their arrogance and how it basically just leads to, you know, their downfall. And I'm not, like, this is just, like, one, this is just a Tok'ra installation. This is, like, not the main base, I'm pretty sure. It makes it seem like this is, like, well, I think the goal will think that this is, like, the last Tok'ra, like, you know, base or something, but I'm not sure. There's confusion, but that leads into the next episode. But,
well, just the biggest problem I had with it, and this isn't so much a problem as one of those things that, like, TV series do, especially genre fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they set it up so that Daniel is the only one who can do this mission.
Mm-hmm.
And yet Daniel is the one of them least likely to pull that trigger.
You make good points. Which we'll get into the next episode. Yeah. Motherfucker. Goddamn. I know, I think this is a great episode in regards to most involved. I mean, yeah, Tilk just got some extra lines at the beginning saying, hey, Daniel Jackson, this is a sound plan, you should do it. He's like, yeah, I am planning to do this, and there you go with Tilk. I mean, I don't know if Tilk really did anything else.
He was there. You know, I wanted to say this was a Tilk light episode. I mean, he was there, and he was shooting shit and stuff and running around and, you know, being the action Jaffa. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he didn't have a whole lot of lines, and most of what he said was, you know, like that. He's like, you should do this. I'm already gonna. Oh, well, I heard any good jokes?
Yeah. So now let's talk about the best part of this episode. Let's talk about the system lords. So,
oh yeah.
That was, like, you know, and I actually, like, spent some time going on the internets and reacquainting myself with these various system lords, you know. Bastet, that's essentially Bast, and if you remember, like, Bast is more now commonly known as from Black Panther, so
yeah, Bast, the cat goddess,
and, you know, that's Egyptian mythology, and so yeah, Bast is awesome. Kali Destroyer, if you recall, Kali Destroyer is used in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, even though I think they're using Kali in a negative way, and definitely in a negative way, Temple of Doom, because, like, basically Kali Destroyer is, like, considered, like, you know, to be feared but also to be praised. And
yeah, she's essentially the in Indian mythology, she's the in Hindu mythology, I should say,
yeah,
is essentially the goddess of death. But, you know, like in you know, certain Western more magical traditions, death is not something to fear.
Yeah,
it's more of a change, and, you know, the circle of life and all this stuff. So rather than being a sinister being, you know, in Christianity, death becomes evil and you know, tied with the devil and stuff like that. But most of these most of the other cultures just, you know, see death as part of life. And so Kali, she's depicted as, you know, with a neck, is it a necklace or skirt of skulls? And she's, like, holding all kinds of weapons and stuff, and has a fearsome face. But, you know, she's also, you know, it's not like she's the Hindu devil either.
Yeah, like, you don't fear, I mean, you fear because of their reverence and their power, but, you know, you respect them and celebrate them because they also protect in a way. But yeah, that was, I love reading about that. And, like, it's just, there's so many different sects sex and different, like when I say sex is S-E-C-T-S and yeah. cultures, different cultures that celebrate them and call them different things, which is, you know, it's, you know, it's always fascinating because like there's so much overlap of, you know, religious references and different cultures. Like they all are essentially, a lot of them have so many similarities, and it wouldn't, you know, more than likely they're all the same origin, but taken differently by those various cultures. Mm-hmm. And then, okay.
It was nice that, both Bast and I forget in the episode, is she called Bast or Bastet?
Bastet.
Bastet. Okay. Cause they're the same goddess, just, you know, it's like Ra and Amun-Ra. If you're mm-hmm. looking at Egyptology, depending on which source you're translating from.
Exactly.
But I like that both Bastet and Kali, they got some lines. Because mm-hmm. in the past, we've seen, you know, like, they'll get a couple of models to be this system lord or that system lord, and they just will stand in the background and be part of the scenery and won't say anything. At least they got to talk in this one.
Yeah, exactly. And just seeing how that, I mean, and then Baal, I didn't really get into too much of there. I didn't find that interesting. Morrigan. Okay, so first off, the portrayal of Morrigan and her Lothar, straight up dominatrixes and son.
Oh, she's the one with the, oh yeah, okay. And yeah, she didn't have any lines. She didn't say anything, did she?
Yeah, I don't think so. Maybe one, I don't know. But yeah, she was there, and I'm just like, really, you're going to depict this Irish awesome goddess, this Nordic awesome goddess, as a dominatrix with her slave being in total sub gear, like in leather with spikes. I'm like, come on, you could have done better than that. You could have done better than that.
They could have, yeah.
You made her a ginger. Hey, that makes sense. All for it. But yeah.
But then the corset and the
yeah, but I mean, no, I mean, I'm not against it. Like they you know, that's a cool kink. They look like they portrayed it, but I'm sure they could portray it better, you know, if I was a real like into that. But you know, but at the same time, if we're talking about gods, like, you know, portray it better, like in regards to the culture. Is that what the Irish and Celtic or Nordic culture are supposed to be taken as, like as in sub and dominatrix? That's, I don't know, that cracked me up. I enjoyed seeing that regardless. And then we're also introduced to Olokun, and he is more, oh god, I already forgot what Olokun represented, like what cultures. And then I'm already horrible about that, so I apologize. But no, I did have fun reading about them and just kind of seeing of their origins. And I also had to reacquaint myself with Sapakna, and that was like, I think of a Mayan descent, of a Mayan god. And it was just really weird, like reading the stories.
I loved his portrayal because he was mm-hmm. so freaking skeevy. Just,
yeah.
Every time he talked, my skin crawled. And I was like,
exactly.
I had to remind myself that's perfect for the character.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, well, what's also interesting is like he has a change of attire, because in the previous one with the triad, he's actually in more of a Mayan attire, like mm-hmm. you would think of that culture. So that's definitely different. But yeah, he's still very skeevy. And
I would like to say, just for the mm-hmm. record, Anna Louise Plowman, who plays Sarah/Osiris,
mm-hmm.
I would be her first prime. I would commit so many crimes for that woman. It would.
she's attractive. She's very attractive. And I think it's very funny that you have what's called, because like, yeah, Gold Wolves have sexes, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you have a male Gold.
Yeah, the symbiotes do seem to have a gender, but they don't particularly worry about which. Well, some of them don't particularly care what body they're in.
Yeah, and it's just interesting. You have a male symbiote Gold in a woman female body. So that's, yeah, it's just like, oh, it's kind of kinky there going on. I'm like, oh, non-binary, all right, they, them. As you can see, I was using my different pronouns. I was like, he, she, they, them. It all worked out.
Yeah, so, I noticed that, and I was impressed by that.
Yes, I was like, hey, it works out. But yeah, no, this episode was fun. Like, you know, you could, like, of course the best thing was seeing all of the new system lords, and like, you know, because apparently, like, you know, Lord Yu's the oldest, and like these are the newer system lords you see, as we know that so many other ones that have been dying, like, you know, we've killed Ra, we've killed Apophis, we've killed Kronos, we've killed Sobek, we've killed Seth, I think.
Mm-hmm.
What's that one woman?
Oh, we were just talking, my wife and I were just talking about her tonight. Hathor.
Hathor, yeah, she's dead. And I know there's another one too. So yeah, Sokar's dead too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that's a lot of gods. Cronin, yeah. That's a lot of gods that are dead. And then also, what's her name? She was in, there's a good amount of gods are dead. Nirti, yeah.
No, did they kill Nirti?
I forget, but yeah, is she the one that created Cassandra's planet?
Yes.
Or it could be Nefer. I forget one of those. But yeah, she's there's her whereabouts are unknown. But yeah.
She got away. That's right. Yeah, she.
Mm-hmm. So yeah.
We were talking about how both of us, my wife and I, were both bummed at how ignominiously Hathor went down, and you know, they just sort of threw her over into a vat of liquid nitrogen.
I thought it was so freaking hilarious, though. But no, I mean, yeah, it's just like, yeah, we don't, you know, all of the main, like, the first line, the old guard of system lords are gone, and, you know, there's not that many, and then you just see these new ones. So that's fun to see. And I think it's like that's the best you can take out of this, other than, you know, just shit is just going downhill for everybody. Like, Toker dying left and right. SG-17 is pretty much down to one person who... down to red shirt.
Yeah.
So let's see what happens.
Do we want to talk about a quote for this episode, or do you want to?
I got it. So, okay. So this is in the situation room after Renal comes to visit. Oh, Renal's visiting and they're talking about it, the plan. And then Hammond's like, so you want to stop them, like, from going to the summit? And then Renal's like, quite the opposite, actually. We want them to meet. It will give us the rare opportunity to strike against all of them at once. And then Carter is, you're talking about taking out the entire Gul'dan leadership? And Renal's like, we are. And then Renal's like, welcome to the dark side. Yes, that was my favorite quote. Because just like, he had a lot of good one-liners. And,
oh yeah, O'Neill was peak O'Neill in this one.
Peak O'Neill.
Mine is when they get to Renava or whatever the name of the planet is, and Alduin, their tour guide, is like, are you interested in Toker engineering? And Jack says, oh, interested doesn't quite describe how I truly feel. And Alduin says, well, you're welcome to join us. And Jack says, thank you, Alduin, but I have to go help Teal'c wait for Daniel.
Exactly. Yes, okay. So that is that. Okay, let's go ahead and get into the next one.
Woo-woo.
Okay, listeners, so let's go ahead and get into Season 5, Episode 16, Last Stand. Air date March 29th, 2002, written by Robert C. Cooper, and of course directed by Martin Wood, which makes sense because it's a back-to-back. And then, of course, it's actually similar to its prior episode, Summit. It has 8.1 on IMDb. Okay, so do that whole previously on SG-1, and we're brought back to Daniel and Osiris in the room, and Osiris pulls a dagger on Daniel Jackson, who is alone in youth quarters. Before Danny gets a stab in, he quickly stabs her first with a chemical ring, convincing them that he is Jiren, use Lota. Success! She leaves, but Daniel points out that's it. Against the rules to bring weapons to the summit. So Daniel got, he's like, and then Osiris is like, shut your mouth, I'll kill you. Daniel contacts Jacob Selmac and gives them the update. Jacob is like, why didn't you use the poison, fool? Daniel and his feelings for Sarah answers, well, we can rescue her. Jacob's like, she ain't worth it, do your job. Roll opening credits. As you can see, your previous sentiments was not missed. My synopsis, sir. Okay, after the credits, we were taken back to SG-1 and Lieutenant Redshirt Leader Boy Elliot, who is critically injured but being healed, currently attempting to be healed by Lantash. They are trapped in the tunnels. Elliot mentions a tunnel terraforming crystals, and it can be basically used to help them escape. The crystals are in the lab. O'Neill and Teal'c go to the lab while Carter and Elliot stay behind. When they go to the lab, O'Neill and Teal'c, that's when they see that all the bodies are gone, which means the Jaffa are there now in the tunnels, and then Teal'c gets the crystals, but they will soon run to the Jaffa. Firefight commences, and they're kind of trapped at the moment. Carter tries to move rubble from some of the cave-ins, and Elliot tells her that Lantash still loves her, and that's one of the reasons he's fighting to stay alive and wanted her to know.
Cardin, right in the feels.
Yes. Cardin tries to explain how she carried Lantash's mate, but Elliot interjects, stating that Lantash loves Carter just as much as he loved Jolinar, and regrets what happened to Martouf, and that she shouldn't feel responsible for killing him. Elliot's condition continues to worsen as Carter tries to clear out the cave-in. Carter tries to help Elliot relax as he's being healed by Lantash, and Elliot realizes and reveals that he's going to die on his first mission. Carter tries to reassure him it'll be all right, but Elliot knows he's a red shirt. Carter tells him, you have a chance with a symbiote. Stop feeling sorry for yourself. But then another cave-in happens, and I trapped even more now. It's like cave-ins galore, man. Seriously.
But it's still very well lit.
Yes. And lots of oxygen. Again. Carter tries to help Elliot. Okay, at the System Lord Summit, Osiris tells them that they are all weak, and their summit ain't shit, and they're all vulnerable. They should all come and join together to continue the dominance of the Goa'uld. And like during all of this, Daniel's about to release the poison. However, Osiris finally reveals that she is here to represent Anubis. And then they wish to be recognized as a system lord amongst the coalition or whatever. The other system lords lash out in denial, stating he's dead, or he's believed to be dead after being banished from the system lords a long, long time ago. Lord Yu, like I was speaking previously, he's the last remaining system lord around that time, which was over 1,000 years ago, and he says Anubis got banished, but Osiris says gives the system lords an ultimatum: allow Anubis to be on the council or be placed at his mercy, as he has proven to be a huge threat to like all the system lords. Daniel later contacts Jacob Selmac and tells him of Anubis and the current plans to rejoin the system lords. Jacob tells Daniel that Anubis is an evil mofo not to be trifled with, as he was banished by them for unspeakable acts, even for a ghoul. So this is really bad. And the mission of poison kill is now off. Daniel has to stay around to figure out what Anubis's plan is. Daniel sneaks around the space station and finds some creepy-looking tank filled with a slew of ghoul symbiotes swimming, slithering around in the water. You gross, nasty. Okay, back to Ravana. O'Neill and Tilk manage to kill the Jaffa, pinning them down, and they return to where they left Carter and Elliot. When they arrive, they make radio contact, and Lantash tells them to use one of the crystals they've retrieved to make a short, straight tunnel, which should connect their tunnels. It works. And Tilk seals the tunnel behind them. They can basically go throughout the tunnel, moving further away from the base. Lieutenant Elliot tells them that the Hookra have a broadcast signal, which they can warn potential rescuers to stay away from the planet, which is pretty much what's going off now. And then, because they're basically waiting for Jacob and Daniel not to rescue them. But SG-1 then decides to attempt to reprogram one of the signals to send an SOS to Daniel and Selmac. They use one of the last crystals to get to the surface, and then they essentially walk a long time to get there. Okay. So later, back on the summit ship, Osiris meets in private with you, and then who's opposed to the idea of allowing Anubis back into the System Lords. Osiris tells you of her master's plan. Since Anubis is not a System Lord yet, the Protected Planets Treaty does not affect him, nor does it require the System Lords to retaliate against him, a Goa'uld who is supposedly deadly, who is supposedly already dead. He offers to destroy the Tauri as an offering to the System Lords before joining their ranks. Dan reports this information back to Selmac, and they realize that the Goa'uld are planning on making their human slaves also into hosts as soon as the summit is over. Daniel decides to wait a little longer before making his escape. Because, yes, that's what you do, Daniel. You do things. You make decisions that are not fucking smart. Cool, Daniel. Cool. Thank you, sir. Okay, so the Council of System Lords meets again. Baal opens vote and whether or not to accept Anubis back. The motion passes 6-1 with only you opposing his return. Then, before continuing the summit, they bring on the symbiotes. Instead of allowing them to bend with their slaves, they take one and they eat the symbiotes, which leaves Daniel greatly disgusted and horrified along with me.
Yeah, that was some dark shit.
I need to talk about that shit later. Okay, a couple more paragraphs, we're almost done, and I got really lazy, so thank you, Wiki. Appreciate you, love you. Later, Daniel has the opportunity to speak with Balls Lothar. sorry. Stupid. He reveals that he, too, knows the true nature of the Gould. In fact, the Lothar, or at least this one, to enjoy their positions because of the hope of that one day, if they serve their masters well, they'll be granted the honor of implantation. Daniel's attempt at intelligence gathering backfires when Balls Lothar warns you that Daniel cannot be trusted. Meanwhile, Daniel is attempting to steal Yu's cargo ship and leave with Osiris. He has learned of the attack on the Toker base on Ravana and communicates the information to Selmac. He manages to capture Osiris and the cargo ship, but is attacked by Yu. Yu releases Osiris, but she assumes he's behind her capture and stabs him with a dagger. Before Osiris can kill Daniel, Yu gets back up and begins wrestling her for control of the dagger. Daniel escapes to the cargo ship in an escape pod, and Selmac picks him up. Daniel and Selmac then arrive to Ravana. They cloak immediately after leaving hyperspace. Zapakna, commander of on the attack of Ravana, he's like, why do they have that in Wiki? That makes no sense. Okay, Zapakna, who's like still like bombarding them. He's aware of the ship has entered the system. Daniel and Selmac receive the automatic warning telling them that the base has been compromised, but Jacob decides that they should leave. However, SG-1 finally makes it to the broadcasters and they receive the SOS. They land on the planet and a number of gliders lock up and to their heat signature as they enter the atmosphere. The ship takes heavy damage and they crash on the planet's surface. But SG-1 sees the crash, and they start off towards the downed cargo ship. Daniel and Selmac leave the ship, and at this point, which is beyond the point of a quick repair job, they meet up with SG-1, and they decide that their only chance is to escape through the Stargate. But since Daniel has a poison, O'Neill decides to take it with him, and once he gets near the Stargate, releases it in the atmosphere in hopes that he will kill all the Jaffa guarding the Stargate. Tilk does not think he could make it to the gate either, but Lantash comes up with a different plan. He will carry the poison instead, and the others will hide. When the Jaffa find him, he will tell them that he knows how to synthesize the poison. When they take him to the base camp and teleport him up to the mothership, he will release the poison himself. Lantash and Elliot insist on this plan, as they are both near death anyways. Carter touches Elliot's face and Elliot on the face, and Elliot tells him he is happy to have known her. Carter reciprocates to both Elliot and Lantash the same. Carter then gets up to leave with the team and Selmac as Elliot stays behind as he hears the Jaffa approaching. Roll end credits. So yeah. I'm disappointed that I didn't get to see the killings of them, so I don't know what happens. Like, do they survive? Does Zapakna get the poison? Because I try to get into the next episode, and I'm like, this has nothing to do with the previous episode, so this is bullshit. I'm kind of annoyed. I feel that I was left hanging, and I was just kind of annoyed by this. I was like, this is bullshit.
Yeah, they were. It was, you put the two of them together, it was like, what have we got? Four. So 7/8 of a great episode.
Yes.
But that ending was just kind of, it was weird the way they ended it. I don't know if it was a matter of
anticlimactic and like anti-cathartic.
Yeah, it was too, maybe it was running too long, or, you know, they were trying to leave loose ends, but they didn't do it very well. I don't know.
You know what they could have done? They could have had Daniel making better decisions, and that could have been taken up less time or in regards to however whatever happened. I don't know. I just find this fucking Daniel.
Yeah. I mean, I love the episodes, and, you know, this is as dark as SG-1 has ever gotten. You know, especially with them eating the symbiotes.
The fuck was that shit about, man? So we're talking about freaking population control?
Yeah.
So basically they grow babies to eat them?
I don't know. I don't remember if they even go back to that, but it was like a 70s horror film there at that point.
What was the point of that? Because I know that if you eat a ghoul, I remember there's that one special ghoul like Buddha type kick what is it, a kid or a symbiote? I forget. Google that basically is like all knowing, isn't there?
And well, like it's the child. Oh, what the hell was it called? Where Teal'c's the woman who was not Teal'c's wife, but he was in love with her, had a baby with Apophis.
Yeah.
And the baby had all was supposed to have all Gould knowledge, and that's where, you know, where Daniel met the Avatar kid.
Yeah, exactly.
He's like, you know, there is no spoon.
I also think like, you know, isn't it like if you like either take on a Gould or eat a Gould and you get their knowledge too? Was there something? I don't know. I'm trying to figure out why did they eat these symbiotes. I am confused. I am disgusted. That was so not needed. And I thought it was a whole implantation part. Because I'd have been like, hey, fuck this. I've been like, yeah, like, fuck this shit. Click, click. Poison. But no, I care so much about.
But one of the best trivia things about this episode is that whole scene, they all had burritos filled with noodles that they were eating. And then they CGI'd the symbiotes over it later.
Lovely. Yeah, I was just like, I was so frustrated. I was like, I don't get to see what fucking happens. Like, who survives? I'm tired of this mysteriousness of who survives, who dies. How about you just let us know? Like, at least something happens.
I have been debating, and I've decided not to spoil.
Okay.
But one of the people in this episode, who I didn't realize this was their first appearance until I saw them, will become very important later on.
Oh, I think I kind of figured it out, because I was kind of reading, like, okay, I was going through each god, and I kind of, like, saw how many seasons they're going to be in for years. I'm like, oh, okay, you're the next one. I see. I don't know why they didn't make it fucking Bost and Kali, but whatever.
Well, yeah, because, you know, women in the 90s still were just set dressing, unfortunately.
Bullshit. They would have made bad bitch enemies. It was very, like I said, anticlimactic, anti-cathartic, and I thought they could have done better. But
Yeah. Well, you know, this is something we see in Star Trek a lot, too. And I don't know, because you know, you can find tons of information about how, you know, behind the scenes stuff from Star Trek. Mm-hmm. And there is like nothing out there for Stargate.
Hmm.
You know, other than just, you know, the little trivia bits on the wiki or on IMDb.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot, you know, so I don't know if Stargate does the same thing that Star Trek did. But a lot of times, especially with like the Next Generation, mm-hmm. If it was a two-parter, especially if it was like a season-ending cliffhanger,
mm-hmm.
they wouldn't necessarily have both parts plotted out when they shot the first part.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
You know, so like Best of Both Worlds, which is always in the top 10, if not the best.
Is that the one where he gets taken over
by Picard becomes a Borg? Yeah. Borg.
Yes.
They didn't have part two written when they shot part one.
Really?
Yeah. Because they didn't know if Stewart was coming back. There was a whole controversy about whether he was coming back for season four or not.
It's juicy.
But if you watch it, part two is still fine, but it's nowhere near as good as part one was.
Yeah, indeed.
And I'm wondering if that was a situation here where they, you know, Malazzi and Mueller? Oh, I'm blanking on
On who wrote this?
Yeah, it was
Robert Cooper. Because like, yeah, the first one, yeah, the first that's why I also found was weird. Even though it was directed by the same person, by Martin Wood, the first one, some of it was by Malozzi and Mully, and then the second
Mully, that's it, yeah.
And the second one was by Cooper. So I was just like, that's a difference. Like, sense. That's a definitely good strong thing for that theory. It's strong evidence for that theory.
Yeah, you got different people doing different halves of a two-part episode, which always baffles me that they would do that.
Mm-hmm.
But the finish up is they definitely didn't fully stick the landing. And boy, were our main characters wearing some heavy plot armor through this one.
Mm-hmm. Because
people were dying left and right, and they were like, oh, I'm fine.
Yeah, I was just like, man, shit's dire. And like, and this is also another complaint I had. Like, this is where I was confused on, because it seems that Zapochna thinks that they're taking out all of the Togra, and this is just like some sub base from how I'm taking it.
Yeah, you're right. It's not a through line of the Gua'ulds through the entire series has been their arrogance and their belief that they are infallible.
Yeah, and oh boy, but he also talked. I think it's also he's also probably talking now more about obtaining the poison to really just take them all out, and just a matter of finding the others. Because like, yeah, but no, it just yeah. But the arrogance of both the Tok'ra and the System Lords and the Ghoul and the baddie Ghouls is continuing thing of them, and eventually we'll see their downfall because we're only in season 5. So.
Oh yeah, they're I don't know when it happens, but there ends up being an adversary that makes the Gauld look like Girl Scouts.
Okay. Yeah, and then
actually, Girl Scouts are pretty formidable. Maybe Boy Scouts.
Yeah. But yeah, but no. I was gonna say yeah. I don't know what we're gonna see of Anubis. Are we gonna see his face? Who knows? I don't know. I feel like he's just gonna be kind of like Sokar in a way. Where it was like, oh, you thought like he was really scary, and then you saw him and it was like, eh.
Yeah.
I'm not that scared. I'm like not like I'm not as you know. I mean, so far I think the scariest or like I would like fear more is like Apophis, and I think maybe Seth because Seth was culty, and culty people are always creepy. Like the creep factor is like extreme on that one. So yeah. Yeah, did you have a favorite quote on this one?
You know, the sad thing is, I mean, yes, but I of course didn't write it down because I'm a dumbass. And the only quote that's available online that I could find mm-hmm. is funny because it's also a dig at Star Trek. Mm-hmm. After Alkash, the cargo ship crashes, mm-hmm. and Daniel's like, yeah, you would think that a race smart enough to fly around in space would be smart enough to have seatbelts. And Jacob says, I just prefer not to crash.
That was mine too. Yeah, like that was pretty much like the only funny one. Like there wasn't as many funny because like shit was just dire in this episode.
Yeah, this was dark as fuck.
So there's not a lot of comedy happening. So that's like again, we have various differences between the prior and the part two. So I don't know why this got the same score as 8.1. So I was just like, whatever. But
I just, you know, and also killing Ensign Redshirt, or not Ensign.
Leader Boy, you know, Elliot.
Elliot. There was no reason for it.
Yeah, that sucks.
You know, they brought him in and it was like, oh, cool.
On his first mission. That's fucked up, man. Like, you know, that's just wrong. It's like he really tried, like in freaking Prover Ground. He did his hardest
to
prove himself. And you got to just kill him like that 2 episodes later. That's whack.
Yeah, they could have, you know, that character could have been anyone. It could have been just, you know, Lieutenant New Guy who...
Well, I also think it's probably they wanted to, like, I mean, yeah, but at the same time, it's just like they also had to say goodbye to Lantash, so they got to, I guess, make it somewhat. So I guess, yeah, whatever. They just created an episode to introduce a character for another episode to just stretch out the season to 22 episodes. So I guess I'll give it that then. That's the only way that'll make sense.
And this is also still, you know, and I know I keep hinting at this, and I wish I knew when it will come to fruition. But Daniel's dissatisfaction with everything continues, and his, like I said earlier, he was the worst person to put on this mission. And if they just needed somebody who was an SG member who the System Lords wouldn't recognize, there's 16 other SG groups.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's also, you know, one of the people whose name is in the opening credits. So it's got to be one of the team. And things will happen.
Okay. Doesn't sound like fun. No, like, oh, that's ominous. That sounds depressing. I just want nothing but good vibes, man. Like, I mean, I'm enjoying things that are happening. I mean, I have everything.
It's not bad. I don't want to spoil. And I know it sounds like it might be bad. And at the time, in the actuality of it happening, it was not great, but it'll all work out.
Okay, cool. Okay, so next episode is going to be Failsafe. I don't know what the fuck that's about. It definitely doesn't tell me about like I have in the previous episode. So yeah, like, so your mileage may vary on these two episodes, listeners. Let us know what you think. But yeah, like, I mean, it's cool going in, but the letdown, yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's a letdown, in my opinion. I don't think it's so much a letdown as it just didn't, you know, the first half was so good.
It didn't deliver.
The second half didn't, yeah, it didn't live up to the, yeah.
It didn't live up to the hype, absolutely.
It was like, you know, getting on the green in one drive and then, you know, it took a four to get it in.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, well, let us know what you think. As always, on Twitter, various things on our show notes. Anything from you, sir?
We don't do show notes, but
oh, whatever. My bad.
But no, thanks, folks, for listening. Thank you for your patience. You know, real life has been kind of weird of late again. I think we're back for regulars now. So things are cool. But thanks for listening, Ro. Thank you for an Herculean effort on those synopses.
Oh, no problem. I had to watch the next one, so I was like, might as well do the fucking synopsis, goddammit. And to my tiny regret, but whatever. We got through it. we're on the back end of the season. And, we got six more episodes, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22. Yeah, six more episodes left, and we'll go from there. But yes.
And also remember, folks, if you want to be on the show, the price of admission is doing the synopsis. So just let us know.
Don't do it. It's a trap. I promise you. Okay, well, thank you, Rick, for another, as well, for a fun review of two episodes. And other than that, we'll see you again, listeners, and close the iris.
Open the Iris is a production of the Infinite Potato Alliance. If you'd like to reach us, send an email to the7thchevron@gmail.com. That's the7thchevron. Or on Twitter @OpenTheIris. Our theme is by Stephen Cogswell, and you can find more of his music at stephencogswell.bandcamp.com. And our logo is by Brandon Ushio of the Fandom Podcast.